Hi guys, this is my last weekly update from home for a while. So I am really making the most of the last moments of being here. And as soon as I do this, I'm going to go out there where it is still nice and sunny and soak up some rays before I go to the somewhat less pleasant European summer over Australian winter. True story, you'll see the photos when I get there. As that may be, let me update you on a few things I've been doing. I've just come from the AusCert conference, which is literally just around there. I walked there yesterday, which was quite nice. And this is probably one of our premier security conferences for Australia, which has been really good. I've been going there for a few years now. I did a talk yesterday on the responsibility of disclosure. And this was the first time I'd done this talk. And the intention was to talk about how responsible disclosure works from an individual perspective, and also how it works from the perspective of the organization. And what I did is I showed a lot of stuff around the way we have really screwed it up, both as individuals and organizations, and the way we've also done it really well. And there are many examples of each. Just a couple straight off the top of my head. So the Cloud Pets thing, I've spoken about Cloud Pets here before, written about it in detail, is one of the worst handlings I have seen of a number of different security incidents by an organization. Conversely, the Red Cross Blood Bank incident, where my data was in there, as well as my wife's and 550,000 other Aussies, was one of the best handled incidents I've seen. So I did this talk yesterday to a really packed out room. Everyone seemed to enjoy it, which was really good. I was really happy with the way this went. And it's funny, someone sort of tweeted afterwards that something about the way I rehearse these things. This was actually the fifth time I'd done the talk, but the first time anyone had ever seen it. So by the time I go up there and I do a talk like that, it's something which is already pretty familiar. So that sort of helps these things run pretty smoothly. That one yesterday ran great. Very, very happy. I also, I got a runner-up. You know, I don't know whether it was the first runner-up or the second runner-up, but there is an award that they have here each year, which is for Individual Excellence in Information Cybersecurity. I got nominated, third time I'd been nominated, third time I didn't win it, but it was nice to get a certificate and to get a recognition. And we had this great dinner last night, gala dinner with entertainment and awards for multiple different categories as well, which was really good. So I spent a lot of time speaking to a heap of people, which frankly is what these events are so good for. And it's what I'm looking forward to on this long trip I'm about to head off on to Europe as well, is having the time to go to places and talk to people and actually get out of what is otherwise kind of like my isolated little spot on the other side of the world. So for all of you at events as well who go and see myself or other speakers do their thing, make sure you go and say hello and have a good chat to them, because this is what many of us really like doing with these events. So that was AusCert. I saw some really interesting talks there. A lot of diversity there this year. A lot of male, female speakers. A lot of young folks, older folks, government people, hacker people. It was just a really good mix. I met Sammy Kumkar, which I was really happy about. If you don't know Sammy, he's the guy who wrote the MySpace worm about a decade ago, got himself about 1 million friends overnight by some clever JavaScript. He was a lovely bloke, did a really interesting talk today as well. And again, like going to events and meeting people like that is really kind of cool. All right, on to other stuff. So that was AusCert. That's great. I'm done with that. I'm going to talk more about my travels and things as I go on them. What I will say for now is that I'm off to Portugal tomorrow. Never been to Portugal before. And I'll be doing a user group talk there during the week. If you have a look at my blog, there's a link to the thing. I just should check. When am I doing the talk? Is it... I think it is going to be on Monday. Listen from Ben's Facebook. It's going to be on the 29th, which will be on Monday. Incidentally, I have so much stuff on these trips. I've just got like a list of places I need to be and things I need to do. And before I go, I make sure it's all perfect. And then I focus on the next thing. So at the moment, that next thing is getting in a car tomorrow to go to the airport. Anyway, be that as it may, I'll be there in Porto, in Portugal, on Monday night doing a user group talk to the OPSEC. I think it was OPSEC. Where were we? I'm sure it's OPSEC. Anyway, it's there on my blog. OPSEC user group there in Porto, doing some security things. I will also be in Belgium a couple of days after that. In fact, I will do my weekly update next week from Belgium. I'll be in Leuven, and I will be speaking at the Azure, I think it's the Belgian Azure user group there on Thursday night. Let me check that. That is Norway. Trondheim, Belgium. 1st of June. What's the 1st of June? I'm pretty sure that's Thursday. Check the calendar. So really looking forward to that. I really like going to Belgium because they've got epically good beer as well. And a bunch of really nice people too. So they're the next two things that will happen between this update and the next update I do. Now, on to other things that have happened during the week in terms of bits and pieces I've written about or things worth talking about. And one of them is I did my Security Sense column. And I wrote about how the internet remains a fragile beast. And this sort of, I was thinking a lot about this after WannaCry. And one of the things that struck me with WannaCry is I went to bed on a Friday night, right? And like the internet was fine. It was working, no dramas. And I got up on Saturday morning and the headlines were like, yeah, everything's on fire. Now, it actually wasn't. It wasn't too bad. But we kind of just got this little glimpse of how bad could things be, right? Like if we had a bad enough vulnerability at a sort of critical enough component of the internet or of the machines that power the internet, we could have some serious issues. And I think that the consensus with WannaCry is that we kind of got off a bit lightly, because when you're talking about a vulnerability which can spread and do remote code execution and just spread by simply a machine being on the network, no user interaction required. You didn't have to open the phishing email or run the malware or anything like that. You just had to be online. You start to go, wow, like this could actually be really serious one day. And you think back to the likes of Mirai, the Mirai botnet later last year, where we had DVRs and webcams effectively joined into this massive botnet, which was then used to DDoS the likes of Dyn DNS, which is a pretty critical DNS provider. And I guess the point that I'm making in this Security Sense piece is that when you start to think about the number of parts of the internet that could go wrong and the sorts of damage it could do, it gets kind of worrying. So imagine it's like the TCP/IP implementation in Apache. You got about half the internet's web servers running Apache. Imagine a WannaCry style bug there, which could do RCE and then self-propagate. Like that would just be devastating. And it is hard not to think that at some point in the future, with so many machines on the web and so many lines of code and so many potential points of failure, that we're not going to see something really catastrophic at some point. I suspect we'll have something of some degree that's going to be much worse than the likes of WannaCry or Mirai or all these sorts of things. I don't know when, I don't know what it will be, but you just can't help feeling that we're a little bit vulnerable when you look at this whole thing. So anyway, check that out. That was Security Sense. And I think if anything, that's just more of a thought piece on where might this whole thing be heading in the future. Now, I did a blog post about something that I've mentioned here many times before, and I'm very happy to now see live, which is my GDPR course. Europeans are all over GDPR. They know exactly what that is. The title of this course, and again, I'm checking all my notes because the thing is, I don't go back and edit these, so I want to kind of get it right the first go. This is the GDPR attack plans. This is the General Data Protection Regulation in the EU, and the attack plan is this course that I've written for Varonis, what you need to know. Now, I've done a bunch of courses for Varonis. I've done ransomware courses and courses around web security fundamentals, courses on things that are sort of fundamental things that people should know, often technical people, often mainstream people. I think the last one I did was around things like you really should have good unique passwords and update your software. That was before WannaCry too. So anyway, I do a bunch of these for Varonis. They pay me to do them because they then use that as a branding exercise for them. They give it away to the community for free because it's, again, it's like branding, it's awareness. So the good news is that you can go and watch the GDPR attack plan now for free from Varonis. It's about an hour and a quarter, and I have tried really, really, really hard to take something that can frankly be really boring, which is government regulation, and make it interesting. So I break this down into logical modules. And this is sort of the same thing I'd do with any course. And I'll sort of just give you a bit of a run through of what you can expect if you want to go through this course. So there's a little bit of intro here about, like, why is Europe important? So, and for those of you in Europe who are watching this, you're going, of course Europe's bloody important. It's my home. A lot of people outside of Europe, particularly certain parts of the world, aren't quite as globally aware. And I wanted to sort of be really clear about the significance of Europe, so, you know, things like the GDP, the geographical landscape, etc. And why GDPR is important, because if you want to have a slice of that pie, so let's say you're a US-based company and you want to have a slice of the European audience, you may well have to comply with GDPR. And if you don't, you might cop a fine. They might stop you doing business in Europe. All sorts of bad things can happen. I'll come back to that. All right, so there's a bit of intro stuff in there. I talk about the roles of GDPR. So we've got things like data subjects, so people like you and I, normal people, talk a lot about the data that we own. I'll drill into that more in a moment as well. We talk about data controllers, so the company that is collecting data from individuals, data processors, such as cloud providers, data protection officers, which is a role that many people will need to have in their organizations in order to properly protect data. Data protection authorities. So for example, the ICO, the Information Commissioner's Office in the UK, at least whilst they're still in the EU, would be the DPA, Data Protection Authority, for GDPR. And then each country has effectively regulators that play this DPA role and enforce GDPR. I've got a whole module on understanding personal data, and you know, this is where I think GDPR is particularly significant. Europe has a very, I guess, a more unique approach to the importance and the significance of personal data than a lot of the rest of the world. And what GDPR is really trying to do is say, this is your data. You get to decide who you give it to, how it's used. You own it. You can request it at any time. And your data is not just like your name and your email address. It's also things like your IP address. And in fact, I make a comment in here that in some parts of the world, like in the US, an IP address alone is not considered personally identifiable information. And PII is only a subset of personal data. But then you go to the Europe and GDPR says, well, it is. In isolation, an IP address or a device identifier like a MAC address is personal data. So there's a lot of stuff in here about what constitutes personal data and how you need to look after it. And some of the sort of interesting things that then arise from this is things like, how can you collect personal data from people? So think about the ways our personal data is abused. And I often see this by way of data breaches. I see big marketing lists, for example, of personal data. You can't do that under GDPR unless people have given you that personal data for that express purpose. A lot of stuff in the course about that. Territorial scope. Now, this is really interesting. And this is the bit that I think has a lot of companies outside the EU worried about. Because GDPR is saying, if you want to run a business online and you want to target people from Europe, you've got to play by our rules. You've got to protect data in a fashion consistent with GDPR. And this is really interesting because a lot of companies outside the EU are saying, well, does that mean us? Do we have to? Do we not have to? I've had people say to me, how are you going to still run Have I Been Pwned when GDPR kicks in and you're subject to the legislation? So the easy answer is it doesn't impact me. And I'm going to explain why. When we talk about territorial scope and GDPR talks about extraterritoriality, they're really talking about, are you targeting your material to people in the EU? Are you targeting your services, your goods to European people? And they have various tests and measures for this. So for example, they say, if you've got offices in the EU, you're probably trying to do business there. If you present content on your website in EU languages, you're probably trying to do business there. If there's an option to put stuff in French, all right, good chance you're targeting people in the EU. Maybe you're targeting people in Canada as well. But you see the point. And this stuff sort of starts to line up. You've got an EU office and you've got stuff in French. EU currencies. Once you start putting things in euro or say Swedish krona, okay, so we've still got, let me rephrase it. Let's try say Norwegian krona. Norwegian krona is an interesting one because Norway is actually outside the EU. But the point is, it's not just euros. If it's currencies of EU member states, then that's another sign that you're trying to target people within the EU. EU domains. So if you've got a .fr, for example, for France, and you're presenting content on that, you're probably targeting people there. I have an example here. I pulled out StrawberryNet, and I've mentioned StrawberryNet in various blog posts and talks before, because these are the guys, it's a Hong Kong-based cosmetics company that says, wouldn't it be easy if you could check out without a password? Like if you just go to the website and you buy shit, and then you put in your email address, and then the website comes back and tells you the name and the address and the phone number and all this personal data about the owner of the address. And if that sounds stupid, it is stupid. That's exactly what the site does. But here's the curious thing about StrawberryNet, and this is as it relates to GDPR. I VPN'd into the Netherlands, and I went to my browser and I typed in strawberrynet.com, and it redirected to nl.strawberrynet.com. And then it put prices in euros in multiple places, and they put a big thing up there which says free worldwide shopping. And they put a little section which says Netherlands English. They don't have Netherlands Dutch, only Netherlands English. But the point is that all of this is clearly targeting people from the Netherlands. The Netherlands is an EU member state. GDPR applies. The way the legislation reads, StrawberryNet is going to get a big smack for what they're doing. I hope they get a big smack for what they're doing, GDPR or otherwise, because it's ridiculous. We've got to wait and see, though, because one of the things about government regulation, and we see things like GDPR or things like our upcoming mandatory data breach disclosure laws, which we'll get in February down here in Australia, we've got to wait and see how strict fines are levied. We've got to see how much leeway the likes of the data protection authorities give companies as it rolls out. There are a lot of legally words in GDPR and in our data protection stuff in Australia, or mandatory disclosure stuff. Legally words like reasonable. You know what I mean? So it's one of those things where you can interpret it the way you like. Legally words around the things like the likelihood of impact to people if data is disclosed in a data breach. Got to wait and see how this stuff looks. UK, Brexit as well. I've got a dedicated slide in here where I talk about that, because I know a lot of people in the UK are going, well, what does this mean? Now, Brexit is not going to happen for something like a year after GDPR hits, which is a year from now anyway. So we're going to have this sort of crossover where you've still got the UK in the EU with GDPR in place. And then even after that, we've got this extraterritoriality stuff. So even if you're a UK company and we're post-Brexit and the UK has done its thing and buggered off out of Europe, there's still going to be GDPR implications. I talk a lot about breaches and penalties. And to me, this is sort of one of the headline things. And this is what I've seen a lot in the news, which has been under GDPR, you can get a very big fine. Now, very big fines make companies sit up and pay attention. And I use TalkTalk as an example in here. So TalkTalk, the British telco, who had some rather serious problems with their web things recently, a couple of years back. They got owned by children due to SQL injection vulnerabilities. Massive news over there in the UK. I mean, it was news all over the world because it was a big breach. And after all of this sort of came out in the wash and they got investigated, etc., TalkTalk, who earns £1.8 billion a year, they got fined £400,000. Now, let's put this in perspective. This is like, if you earn $100,000, getting a fine of $22. Now, $22 is what you might pay to go out and have a nice lunch. And it's not like you fundamentally change your life because at some point in the future, you might need to buy a nice lunch. It doesn't have teeth. Under GDPR, we could be talking about up to 4% of annual gross turnover globally. Now, 4% of that 1.8 billion is something like 72 million pounds. Or if we put it back in our normal sort of, if you earn 100 grand scheme of things, if you earn $100,000 a year and you could get fined $4,000 for something instead of $22, now you're paying attention. Now, again, we have to wait and see how this is applied. We don't know how many companies are going to cop the full 4%. And there are other penalties and there are warnings and there are audits and things like that which could also be levied against a company in lieu of that full whack of money. There are various breaches which then lower the maximum penalty to only 2%. I'll talk about those in the course. So we've got to wait and see this stuff. Now, I then go on, there's a final module here around putting GDPR into action. And this is meant to give some actionable steps for organizations. And I've got stuff in here like, you know, data minimization. So here's a good concept. Maybe you shouldn't store as much data as you can for as long as you can. Because what happens here is we see data that was collected a decade ago, no longer needed, but hey, storage is cheap. It's actually more expensive to get people to do the work to decide what can be deleted. So we keep it forever. And hey, who knows when we might want to market to these people and sell them more stuff. GDPR talks about data minimization, gets us away from that. It talks about a whole bunch of other defenses as well. So things like, I'll give you a good example here, pseudo-anonymization. So if we're going to store data about people, does it all need to be clearly personally identifiable in every context? Could we, for example, hash it? Could we mask it? Could we encrypt it? Could we do other things such that if that data is exposed later on, the impact to the individuals is less severe? And this is what so much of GDPR is about, trying to protect the individuals. And given the amount of work I do with data breaches and the amount of people I see who cop really bad things as a result of this, I'm very happy to see GDPR addressing this sort of stuff. Now, having said all that, we do have to wait and see, as I said many times here, how it's actually going to be applied. The course has gone live yesterday my time, which is the 25th of May 2017, which is exactly 1 year before the 25th of May 2018, when the whole thing comes into effect. Last thing I'll leave you with on GDPR, because this is sort of one observation I make in the blog post where I launch it, one of the last things I say. It's a lot of lawyers making a lot of money out of GDPR. And we're seeing, it's almost like a bit of a feeding frenzy at the moment. It's like everyone's a little bit scared and a little bit worried about what's going to happen. And there's all of these firms sort of coming along and going, we can solve this for you, we can do this, we've got reports, we've got charts, we've got all of this sort of stuff. We've got very, very expensive executives who can come in and tell you how to get ready for GDPR. It's a big thing. There's a big business around GDPR at the moment. So look, do go and check out the course. It is meant to be fairly high level. I think I mentioned it's about an hour and a quarter. It's meant to make you aware of the big topic items. It's not going to go in and tell you precisely how to do everything and what's relevant to your specific circumstances. My hope is that it begins the dialogue that organizations need to have about how they prepare for this regulation. All right, so I spent quite a bit of time on that, but this has been coming for quite a while. A heap of people are interested in it. I'm very happy with the course, and the early feedback has been enormously positive too. So thank you for everyone who's said nice things about it. All right, so very lastly, NetSparker is sponsoring me again this week. They have been on there for quite a while now. I think I'm all sponsored out until sometime in July. I must get a little bit more proactive this time and not wait until I'm almost at a period where I've got an empty slot to find other sponsors. But I'll try and get that sorted out. I really appreciate having those guys on board. And as I've said many times before, I do use their things quite a lot, particularly as I travel around, I do workshops and things. I show what automation can do and what it can find in software. And if you don't have anything automating things like dynamic analysis, go and check those guys out because they do a great tool. So that's it for me. I've got to go and finish packing all my things and catching up on some sun. And then I will see you all from the land of beer and chocolates next week in Belgium. See you guys.